Good afternoon, everybody. We're going to go ahead and get started. Mr. Brown just reminded me we are competing against nice weather and the Rangers game this afternoon. So I'm grateful for your presence here. This is a busy time, and I really do appreciate you coming out to share a little bit of information and also to share any insights and questions that you may have. As you all recall, or maybe not, about this time last year, when we met for this convening, I was full of pretty dire predictions about what we faced in the upcoming legislative session. Well, I'm happy to report that while most of these predictions did in fact come true, a few did not. The news was better in some quarters, some very restricted quarters, than we anticipated. What did come true is that budgets were cut. Our budget was cut, the budget of every institution in this state was cut, some more than others. It's also true that higher education took a disproportionate share of the cuts when compared with other state agencies and other sectors in the other aspects of the public sectors in Texas. I think probably the most grim news was the fact that financial assistance to students took a hit. Texas grants were curtailed, other forms of assistance were curtailed, and those cuts have had a dampening effect statewide on enrollment growth. We've seen it here. Even though our enrollment growth this fall is healthy, it is not exponential as it was last year. That's not all bad. We get a chance to catch our breath. But other institutions around the state are seeing flat or in some cases negative growth. So, you add all that up, and what you come up with is the fact that educational opportunity is diminished statewide. Fewer students will have the opportunity to pursue a college education than they did even a year ago. And of course, as you know, our friends in public education suffered even more severe setbacks. Those of you who have children who play in high school bands, for example, know that they're not going to away games the way they used to because you can't afford, the districts can't afford to pay for bus drivers and gas. Arts programs are being reduced or eliminated. Because after all, what does art have to do with, education? other cuts are even more insidious. I won't detail those today because that's not what we're about. But suffice it to say that statewide, the effects of reduced tax collections and other reductions in statewide revenue have rippled through the state economy and have had a devastating impact on the public sector. Well, as I shared with you at our fall assembly a few weeks ago, this university has been spared the most devastating consequences of these cuts, primarily because of one reason, and that was our substantial growth during last year's base period. Last fall, we registered our 10,000th student for the very first time in the university's history. This fall, we registered our 11,000th student, again, for the very first time in the university's history. Next fall, I fully anticipate to register the university's 12,000th student, again, for the first time in the university's history. You can see where we're headed with this, I hope, and it is a positive direction because even though we are scrimping a little bit and we've all had to suck it in and work a little bit harder, eventually, with this growth, will come additional resources. It's a unfortunate fact of the biennial budget system in Texas that the benefits of growth show up 2 years after the growth is actually experienced. So this is perhaps the most strain we will feel during this cycle, really, in the current academic year. Well, you have accommodated this growth with very little in the way of additional new resources. Now, how have you done it? Well, we ran some numbers, and we determined that section sizes have grown 11% at this university in the last 2 years. That's a big number when we're talking about section sizes. This fall, we taught 1,000 additional students with 84 fewer sections on the schedule. Our student-faculty ratio has risen from 18 to 1 to 20 to 1. our productivity, measured in terms of our institutional ability to generate formula funds, has risen by an incredible 15% during this two-year period. So if you're feeling a little more tired than usual, there's a reason for it, all right? You're all working harder, we're all working harder, we're all doing more with less. But we are doing it for our students. We're doing it to carry forward the mission of this great institution. One way to describe the transformation that we have been through and we are still experiencing is that we have become more, quote, efficient. Now, these quotation marks are not the quotation marks of attribution. They are the quotation marks of irony and sarcasm, okay? Efficiency comes at a price. Yet just to say that we are more efficient does not really capture the complexity of what's going on at this university and on our campus. We're going through an evolutionary phase. And as we continue to go through this phase in our history, we must be mindful of the fact that efficiency must always be balanced with quality. And at some point, student-faculty ratios cannot continue to rise, section sizes cannot continue to increase without threatening the quality of our academic enterprise. Well, when do we cross that line? No simple answer to that. But this is why it is so vitally important, especially during this era of accountability and institutional effectiveness, it's vitally important that we engage seriously and deeply in a conversation about the meaning of quality, both at this institution and in higher ed generally. As we prepare for our SACS reaffirmation, we have a little additional impetus to engage in that conversation. And I know that all of you are busily entering your mission statements and your goals and objectives and measurable outcomes and all of those things that you have been talking about into Weave Online, and that's important work. We won't get reaffirmed without that work having been completed. But the conversation about quality does not end when you have populated all of the fields in Weave Online. That's when the report to SACS ends. But the conversation about quality is ongoing, even more so in this very dynamic policy environment in which we find ourselves. Where do we go for definitions of quality? There's no simple answer to that question either. Those of us who are faculty members look to our disciplines. We look to the standards of our discipline-specific accrediting agencies. We think back on what we learned in graduate school about quality from some of those very memorable professors that we had. All of that feeds into the conversation about quality. Those of you who are not on the academic side of the house have parallel, concomitant standards about quality, all having to do with a job well done. But quality is also a measure of value, and value can only truly be measured by engaging those whom we serve in meaningful conversations about what we do, why we do it, how we do it, and whether they find our work satisfying in helping them achieve their objectives in life, in their professions, in their communities. In my discipline, literature and language, we value elegance and simplicity. To me, there is no more compelling definition of quality than the one found in Keats's Ode to a Grecian Urn, which ends with these memorable lines. Beauty is truth, truth beauty. That is all ye know on earth and all ye need to know. If only that were true. This is a great starting point for a conversation about quality, but it is hardly the terminus. It's because the meaning of quality in action, and that's where we live in action, is always evolving and never finished. Truth and beauty, you'll be comforted to know, are eternal. But the definition of quality exists only in the present. I happened on a wonderful quotation from James Baldwin that I'd like to share with you, and it goes like this. There is never a time in the future in which we will work out our salvation. The challenge is in the moment, the time is always now. Well, I take heart in that because Baldwin did issue a challenge, but he also issued an encouragement, and that is by engaging in this conversation now, we will find answers now, and we will profit from our insights tomorrow and far into the future. Well, once again, thank you all for being here. At this point, I would like to invite Dr. Lavelle Hendricks to the stage for a presentation. Dr. Hendricks?
I appreciate the thundering applause I received as I approached the podium. Mr. President, I've also asked Dr. Daryl Harp, who is president-elect of the Faculty Senate for next year from the Ag Sciences, to join me. During our September meeting, the Faculty Senate passed a special resolution to show our thanks and appreciation to one of our divisions here at the university. The Faculty Senate is appreciative for all the work that all the employees are doing across the university to make this a wonderful place. But at this time, and for the sake of time, I will not read everything on the resolution. But Mr. Bob Brown, if you would stand, please. The Texas A&M Commerce Faculty Senate passed the resolution with all of your departments. It says, therefore, be it resolved that the Faculty Senate of Texas A&M Commerce formally acknowledges and extends the profound appreciation to Vice President Bob Brown and the Division of Business Administration for its dedication and outstanding service to the faculty, staff, administrations, and students of Texas A&M University Commerce, signed by the President, the Provost, Dr. Daryl Harp, President-elect, and myself. Congratulations, Mr. Bob Brown. Will the book club please stand? Members of the book club, Mr. Brown has a wonderful book club, and we were studying The Outliers last Friday. We also want to show our thanks and appreciation to you. And by the way, Texas Rangers 1, Tampa Bay 0.
All right. And now, Mr. Brown, to continue in the revels, you may. The format is going to be that each of the vice presidents will present information about their divisions. I'll conclude, and then we'll have time for questions. And Bob Brown will begin with a celebratory disquisition on parking, I believe. Is that correct?
Actually, I was hoping to avoid parking. I'm usually never at a loss for words, but that was very, very nice of the Faculty Senate to acknowledge the work of the Business and Administration Division. And I know the book club stood up, but I'd like the members of our division to stand up and take the acknowledgement that they deserve for that resolution. Please do that. Come on, guys. Well, with a growing institution, there is always a need to examine the facilities and to continue to make improvements so that we can be responsive to the university and its mission. And we're excited to be able to talk to you today about a few things that are going on in facilities. This is no means an exhaustive list, but I think a list to give you a flavor for what's happening in that division. As you know, the university is pursuing its own nursing program and should have one soon. Right now, we have a building where our nursing efforts are housed. We are going to put an addition on that building for a 5-bed lab. It'll be right on the north side of that building to allow that program to continue to grow and to allow them to have a facility right next door to the administration and other classrooms in nursing. When we built the student center just a couple of years ago, we had envisioned about 1,000 to 1,100 students living on campus. We have roughly 50% more than that on campus now. And I understand in the spring we may get another 169 students, which increase the population on campus for about another 10%. And so it is time to add to a facility that's less than 3 years old. And so that's a rare occurrence, but in this case, a very good occurrence. We're going to expand to the south of the student center and add more seating for the cafeteria. We have, if you've tried to have lunch in there at noon, it's a bit of a struggle. We went last year to continuous meal plans so the students could eat any time during the day. That's helped with some of the congestion and some of the traffic inside the building, but it's going to be necessary to expand the cafeteria. We have engaged an architect. We're in the design phase, and we hope to have that up before the fall of 2013. The old music building will come down. I know you've been hearing that story for a year now, but we had some administrative processes we had to go through, including notifying the Texas Historic Commission, and we've done that now, and the abatement on the interior of the facility will start in the next few weeks, and then as soon as we leave here for after a commencement, the wrecking ball will come on campus, and we'll have that building down over the summer break, over the winter break. Now, we may not have all the debris removed, but we'll have the building down over the break. As we continue to get a phenomenal growth in the number of students living on campus, and as the Student Access and Success Division continues to recruit new freshmen to our institution, it's also clear that housing must continue to grow, and so we are engaging in another addition to our housing stock. This will, you see the site plan for here along Culver and Avenue B. There'll be 543 beds in this facility, roughly twice the size of the facility we just built. We are under negotiations with the architect. The builder has been identified, and we are going to open that in the fall of 2013. So another 22 months or so, and we'll have another 543 beds on campus. Many of you have heard about the fact that the university received permission to enter into a sales agreement for the land immediately adjacent to Whitley Hall for commercial development. We have been working with Armstrong Development Corporation. They have until November 30th to finalize that transaction. What they are trying to do with that site is to make it a multi-purpose retail and dining site. As you see, they hope to have a drugstore as the tenant, as the primary tenant in that facility, a bank, a fast food restaurant, and possibly on the far south corner, a major sort of major gas station. The City of Commerce has been suffering through a lack of growth in its tax base because of the lack of businesses. This will provide, turn this land in from tax exempt land, as we own it, into taxable property for the city. So they'll have some revenue for the city. It'll provide additional services for staff and students and an additional place for students to work. We can't tell you exactly what will be on that site until the Armstrong folks have had the opportunity to go through their due diligence period at the end of November. Some other exciting news. We have the president identified last year around $800,000 to construct a covered facility for our equine program. That facility has been designed and bid, and that's what we can currently do with the money we have identified. The folks in the College of Science, Engineering, and Agriculture and the Office of Advancement has asked us to slow down on this. They believe they may have the opportunity for some external funding to add to this structure and to support that program. And so we know we have at least this coming for out on our farm for our equine program, but we may have more if the fundraising is successful. And then last but not least, parking. Many of you know that, was anybody aware that we raised a parking fee this year? Yeah, that seemed to be the fee that got the most attention. I did want you to know that we are doing some major work and improvements in parking this year as a result of that increased fee. First big effort will be the science parking lot resurfacing. When that parking lot was built, obviously there was not a thick enough layer or good enough work done to that facility in order for that asphalt to remain in good enough shape, and so we're going to have to resurface all of that. We're going to have to change some of the drainage. Many of you have been there when it last rained. Maybe you may have remembered when it last rained. I certainly do. It was April something. But there are obviously drainage issues, and the parking lot wasn't engineered exactly right. So we will begin. We can't do all of that over the break, so we'll begin with the area closest to the building the first week in December and take a few of those spaces out while we resurface that. And then we have the major work to do on the part that's to the west for the that building. And then we'll add some new spaces. We're going to add new spaces north of the field house on that flat piece of property. It's kind of built up on the hill. We'll be able to add 85 to 100 spaces there. And then next to the nursing facility, we will add additional parking. Now that may take a little while because it's likely that that space may be needed for staging for the construction of the new addition to the student center. But we should see this year some major resurfacing and major improvements of existing lots, plus the addition of 150 to 185 new spaces. And now, Dr. Hendricks.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I come bearing wonderful news. You know, Bob talks about parking. We're very pleased to announce that our 20th day enrollment did actually achieve 11,258. And for those of you, yay, those of you who have been in this business for many years, you know there are two critical dates. 12th day, they have to be enrolled. 20th day, they have to have paid. So I want to thank each and every person in this room this afternoon and every faculty member and staff member back slaving away in offices for all you did to make this enrollment goal a success. Each contact we have with students determine whether they come and whether they stay. So thank you for all you've done. Also wanted to share final enrollment credit hours for each of the colleges. Hal is going to want a bonus after this, but you'll notice there that the College of Business did lead the university in enrollment growth. And then further down, you'll see other evidence of our growth at the undergraduate level, and then some concerns that we have at the graduate level that we will be addressing. One of the things to keep in mind is that in fall 2010, we did have the Cash for College initiative, and that does make a difference when you apply money to enrollment growth. Also wanted to share some excellent news about our Collin Higher Education Center. Many of you know we actually entered that partnership in spring 2010. The first semester that the initiative was launched, we actually had almost 600 students. Look at that pattern of growth there with this fall's enrollment being over 1,000 students. For those of you who are not aware, Jamie Babinos, where are you, Jamie? There you are, is our new coordinator who's actually stationed at that facility. And I can assure you with what we've seen so far with Jamie's enthusiasm and passion for helping students, that enrollment's only going to triple by next year. Right, Jamie? You'll see in the next slide the actual enrollment breakdown by university. You'll notice that our university surpasses the growth held by University of North Texas, Texas Women's University, University Texas at Dallas, and then Dallas Baptist University. I wanted to give you just a few highlights for the fall semester regarding our students. Our first-time full-time retention rate actually settled at 68.36%, which is the highest in our university's history. Last year, it was at 62, I have to get my trifocals adjusted here, 62.81%. You may not realize that we have so many military and veteran students enrolled at this university. This fall, we have 575 students, which is actually an increase of 127 students from last year. This year's freshman class, we have 17 valedictorians, 10 salutatorians, 110 who were in the top 10% of their class, and 280 who were in their top 25%. The average SAT was 971, and the average ACT was 21.1. I think from what I'm hearing from faculty, they are enjoying having students who are coming here to learn and who are actively engaged. So we thank you all for the success of this fall 2011. And at this time, I think Dr. Lemansky is going to present some information on academics.
Thank you, Mary. And I would just like to add what the President said in thanking all of you for really stepping up to the plate and taking on additional responsibilities, additional teaching loads, increasing the amount of students you have in your section so that we're able to move up and become a much more efficient and well-performing university. If I could have the next slide, please. Mary mentioned that we have lots of growth. Wonderful. Over 11,000. We have some additional faculty coming on this next year to help address this growth. We have a number of open pins that will be filled this year that have been open for the past several months, in fact, the past year. We have roughly, I think there are about a dozen of those right now. It fluctuates because people tend to leave and people are coming in, but basically about a dozen. The President provided funding a little earlier for 5 new faculty lines, and we have those in place and ready to be recruited for. In addition, 13 new lines, now not existing pins, but new lines will be added to the 5 that the President has provided from a variety of sources. So I think we're gonna be in pretty good shape this next year as we approach the academic year beginning in the fall of 2012. And in fact, I should say that if opportunities are there to recruit people for the second semester, we're certainly going to try to do that. I might mention that these are minimal faculty figures. We think that there may, if the need arises, and we're going to continue to expand the effort to recruit faculty to meet those needs as our university continues to grow in student population, and certainly we will come up to the task in providing that kind of support. Additional adjuncts will be added as well as needed. Next. We have some low-producing programs that we had to deal with this year, and we were, there were a number of low-producing programs that really needed to be phased out. They were programs that had been in place for a long time and really didn't have that many graduates and weren't of that much interest to our student population. So you can see some that were phased out. This was done by the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. A number of the programs that were to be phased out, we were able to sort of reconfigure and make them useful programs. We certainly hope they'll be useful. For example, if you look at on the right side of the slide there, we've created a BFA in visual communication that came from the BFA in art direction and BFA in design communication. So that was combining 2 programs into one so that the number of students, number of graduates were going to be at a level that was acceptable to the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board. In the case of music education, the Master of Music Education was combined with a performance component. And again, this increased the number of students that were enrolled so that we would be able to be at a level that is appropriate to keep a program going. We had some other temporary exemptions that we requested. We requested 7 of them. You can see that 3 were approved, 2 in the physics area, the bachelor's and master's in broad field science and physics. And I might mention that we are the only regional university right now that will be able to offer a physics degree, assuming that some of the other schools are not able to get theirs reinstated. But right now, we're the only show in the system other than College Station for physics. And so we're going to be taking on probably a leadership role in helping some of the other universities retain a physics opportunity for their students. BBA and Management Information Systems has been taken over by some other programs. The exemptions that we had denied, you can see, are Spanish, math, sociology, and athletic training, and we have one more appeal process. And so we're going to be appealing those three that you see there. Hopefully we'll get those reinstated. We'll be able to make the arguments that we'll keep those programs in place. But to be perfectly honest, it is an uphill battle. And we were told that it's going to be very, very difficult to get these programs approved. But we're going to do the best we can, and we're going to present the information that we hope will save at least some of these programs, if not all of them. Bob mentioned the BS in nursing, and we're doing that right now in partnership with Texas A&M University Corpus Christi for a year, with the idea that it will become our own program here at Texas A&M University Commerce beginning in the fall of 2012. So we're excited about the fact that we're going to be able to offer the nursing program, the Bachelor of Science in Nursing initially, and then on to master's level programs in nursing over the next maybe 3 or so years. Academic partnerships is now operational, and that's something that I think you heard about previously, where we're offering programs online. We have a very successful EMBA program going right now, also a BSBA, and there's an MS in Applied Criminology. So these are all operational and look like this is going to work very well for Texas A&M University Commerce. We have an EDD in Educational Administration that's going to be 100% online starting in February, and we're excited about that, as well as the MS in Computational Science that has now been submitted to the Board of Regents for approval in November. You may recall we initially had talked about having a PhD in Comp Science, and since we didn't have a feeder program, they suggested we go back, do the master's degree, build that program up, and then come back later and do the PhD, and that's what our intent is. So the long-term goal is to do a PhD degree, but first step is to get this MS approved, and we are pretty certain that that's going to happen. Next. Well, I just picked out a few things here and there that represent significant accomplishments of our faculty members and departments and colleges here at the university, and I just wanted to mention some of these. There are many more, and every opportunity I'll get, I'll mention some other ones as well. One of the things that I learned about recently was that the College of Business, forget what that says up there, that doesn't make sense. I'm gonna read what makes sense. The College of Business is ranked the 9th largest provider of graduate degrees in business to Hispanics in the United States. Did I say that correctly, Hal? So we're very proud of that. Dr. Brent Dunham and Dr. Gil Nazier were selected as finalists for the Metroplex Technology Business Council's Tech Titan of the Future Award for maximizing motivation targeting technology at this summer camp. And this is a very big honor. And the fact that we had finalists that were considered by this organization is phenomenal. The Litton Lang graduate students have given 60 conference presentations this year and published over 15 scholarly articles. Quite an accomplishment for our students. Extramural funding, I think I mentioned this before, went from $4.5 million to over $7 million in the last year. And we hope that that will continue, that trend is going to continue upwards. So we're going to have to continue to work hard to do that, especially in these times. We know when there are added teaching responsibilities, but with added new faculty, we should be able to, I think, continue to grow in this area as well. Teacher education was ranked number one in the Texas A&M University system in 2010 as far as the number of teachers that were produced. Litton Languages has maintained 100% placement rate for their PhDs. A&M Commerce is the leading producer of certified teachers, and both certified teachers and public school administrators in the state of Texas. Our visual communication program has been recognized as the best program in art direction in 2010 by CMYK magazine. That's an international magazine that ranks programs from all over the world. And to be ranked in this is phenomenal. As you know, the music program has been invited to perform at Carnegie Hall in early 2012. Our online MBA program is ranked number two best buy by geteducated.com. I went online and I saw the ranking. I know it's a fact. Because I wanted to verify that. And indeed, it is true. We also are expanding our globalization programs. We have a number of programs that we're pushing forward on. Certainly programs are already in existence in Sarajevo, Morocco, Korea. We are expecting around 160 students from Konkuk University that are part of a 1+3 program where they spend a year in Korea getting their English language skills honed and ready for entrance into our university here at Texas A&M Commerce, and they'll be coming in January to complete 3 years and get their bachelor's degrees here. So we're excited about having and hosting these bright young students from Konkuk University in Korea, and they'll be here very shortly. And with that, I'm going to call on Rusty Waller to talk about the Global Summit on e-learning.
Well, we will share with you some things on the QEP. They told me to go into my two-minute offense because I need a T-shirt that said, "Help, I started talking and I can't shut up." I did wear one a couple of Sundays ago to church that said, "Jesus is coming soon, look busy." We have a tremendous opportunity ahead of us in our SACS reaffirmation effort, and that is that we must develop a quality enhancement plan to impact student learning. In the last 2 years, we went through a process to identify a topic and to delineate the goals of that topic. Our topic is globalization. We all know that we live in a rapidly shrinking world, and our students are going out to compete not just in a local workplace, but in a global workplace, and our QEP will be designed to impact their employment and to empower them as they go into this global economy. We have four goals. I wished I could take credit for the brilliance of the acronym here, but Rock Clinton actually did this. We're building a safe world, scholarship, awareness, fluency, and engagement. So that's what our QEP is all about, a great opportunity to impact student learning. Even though it deals with student learning, if you're not in an instructional area, you still can't hide. We're all in the same business, delivering education. We're all on the same team, and this will involve everyone in the university. As we move to the next slide, where we have this one, I want to invite you to attend the conference on global learning, which will be hosted at A&M Commerce on November the 9th through the 11th. There is a registration fee of $100. Don't worry about that. You have deans that are dripping with money. They have all sorts of enhancement monies. They have professional development monies. And if they don't have any money, you know who the provost is. So go for him. He can fund you. We want you to be part of this. We have a stellar cast of speakers. We will have in that group Rudy Jackson, who is the vice president from SACS, who oversees the accreditation of this institution. Doesn't that sound impressive? He needs to see you there. We also have Dr. Raymond Paredes, who is the commissioner of higher education in Texas, who will speak. We have William Durham, who is from Colloquy, but just moved to Colloquy. Before that, he led the Lone Star Community College's distance ed program. We have Rob Abel, who is the executive director of the IMS Global Learning Consortium. Now, if you're here and you're a digi nerd, you're really going to enjoy him. He's a good guy. Be interested in content. Don't fall asleep. Okay, now, we also have with us Makila Davis Douglas, who will speak for a group called Epsilon with Lifelong Portfolios. We have Jerry Hanley, who will share with us the Merlot system, which is out of Southern California. It is an international system of free educational materials developed by our peers. And our most illustrious speaker will wrap the summit up, and that will be our own president, Dr. Jones. And if the others want to see you there, I guess you'll be looking, won't you? We would like for you to come and be part of this. It will be a very good event. Now, just in closing, I want to tell you that we weaseled some money out of the Dean of the College of Education. Not only will Merlot be speaking, but on Wednesday night we have a dinner, and Merlot may be there as well. So I think we got the money out of him. But we want to extend to you a very special invitation to be part of this. This is kind of an initial kickoff to our quality enhancement plan, which we will be living with for the next 5 to 6 years. We will present SACS a plan in 2013, and we will be in full implementation by 2014. So we would love for you to be part of this. It is a great opportunity to participate with some very stellar speakers. Thank you.
Thank you, Rusty. That's always inspiring. The Advancement Division this year, with a simple goal of just over $1 million, was very fortunate. And we got a few gifts in towards the end of the year that actually vaulted us way higher than what we had anticipated. So I thought it would be interesting, at least, to show people that what we do is effective. So. Our donations were $1.48 million this year, and the interesting part, though, is we're creating some metrics for how do we get to that $1.48 million. And you do that by keeping metrics on the number of gifts. We've increased that significantly, increased the number of donors significantly, and increased the number of new donors from 418 to 665. That's very important, because that's what I'm trying to create, is a new donor base that will feed us information for us to take to the next level. So those are all positive increases that we can brag about. Now, the distribution is actually, it says cash at 66%, but the bequest was a cash gift. The matching gift would naturally be a cash gift too. So we're actually at about a 80-20% split in our cash gift and gift in kinds. And gift in kinds are just as important as cash gift, particularly when they affect our students. So we work with the departments when they receive equipment, computer equipment, video equipment, things like that, and we place them on as a gift, because it is something that tangible and that we use. And it's kind of an illustration that it's not the only way to give. Something that I'm emphasizing, although we don't have the resources to put people to it necessarily, is our bequest. We're actually being a lot more proactive in reaching out to people. The greatest wealth is in that, right now for us, is in that decades of the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And all of us hate to admit our mortality, but it's part of what we do, and we do it in such a way that we don't embarrass the donor or embarrass ourselves. So it's out there, it's being discussed, and it had a significant impact on our fundraising this year. Every gift counts. We had, everybody likes to know the big gifts, and everybody looks at the big gifts, but this part of the slide is actually just to emphasize my appreciation, the division's appreciation, I should say, for people like yourselves, my bridge builders, and people that are interested in joining what we have, this new recognition initiative out there called Lions for Life. So you'll be hearing more about it as time goes on, and that's what's going to impact our students the most. Last but not least, I'm going to go over some of the major gifts. We had a $220,000 gift in kind of land that went to the Department of Biological and Environmental Sciences. We had a cash gift of $200,000, and that was left for scholarships, which is very important. Mary Bonham name comes up again. She was on a $50,000 a year pledge for 4 years, but she told me she just didn't like owing people money, so she wrote me a check out for $150,000 this year. those are impact gifts that make a difference. And Tom and Colleen Rollins, some of you may recognize the new structure we have near the Memorial Coliseum. It's about 80% complete. We're waiting on some last touch-ups for it, which will include a lioness and some cubs titled The Teacher, and that's in memory of a young lady who was killed here back in 2006. So her parents were willing to do something very nice for beautification for our campus, and at the same time they had enough money actually to establish a scholarship endowment. So, you know, a lot of good things come out of some sad situations. Then, of course, we can't go without giving our own community some good recognition. On our music building, they gave us a $50,000 pledge, which would be $10,000 a year over the next 5 years. So we're very grateful that they decided to step up. And I know it's always about the bottom line, so my challenge for next year is to take that $1.4 million to something above that. So I appreciate all the deans in helping us, going out and visiting with folks, the faculty members that have taken an active interest in it, and we hope to be able to at least go up $100,000 or more on it next year. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Randy, and thanks to all the VPs. We're going to close the presentation part of the afternoon with a little update on some legislative activity, some bills that came out of the 82nd legislature. I always like to end these things on a high note, so I'm kind of questioning the wisdom of the order of the presentation at this point. But be that as it may, if there's good news in here, perhaps you can point it out to me. We're going to post this on the website, by the way. I'm not going to go through all these bills one by one, but as I touch on the high points, you'll see a theme developing, and the theme is that the legislature, our decision makers, our elected officials, speaking on behalf of the people of Texas, are becoming increasingly interested in what we do, and that's now the law. The things that we used to do just because of professional standards, just because they were the right thing to do, now must be documented, posted on the web, and available for public view. I don't see that as threatening, but it does indicate that we're in kind of a new era of accountability. This first one I do want to spend a moment on, House Bill 9, has to do with success-based funding. This is something that actually has been knocking around for a while. The bill did pass, and the coordinating board will be developing metrics for determining what they're calling success-based funding. Success, and there's, I think, four different factors that go into that. The most interesting one is that the coordinating board staff has developed an algorithm to predict the anticipated retention and graduation rate of an institution based on a variety of factors, characteristics of its entering students. One is Pell Grant, and one has to do with number of top 10% students. And they pour those numbers into a black box and they crank it and it comes out, well, you should have a 6-year graduation rate of 42%. The success-based funding will distribute additional money if we surpass that anticipated graduation rate, and we will be penalized if we don't hit it. So it's a very complicated metric, but it's kind of like the law of gravity, you know, it is the law. And we will be measured in terms of that success, and we'll either be monetarily rewarded or penalized based on our ability to hit those targets. Next one has to do with textbooks. If there is a political issue regarding higher education that is higher on the minds of students and legislators than textbooks, I'm not sure what it is. Students never like to see increases in tuition, but what they are really mad about is the increasing cost of textbooks. And now universities are being held responsible for trying to control those costs to the extent possible. Jerome Osborne here on our staff in the Recreational Activities Center has been working on an e-textbook initiative. And when he visits your department in college, please give him some time, because he's come up with some very innovative and cost-saving strategies that will help our students afford their textbooks. And those of you on the faculty know that The problem is not so much that our students have a hard time paying for textbooks. The problem is they can't pay for them, so they don't buy them. So they show up for class, and they're 8 weeks into the semester, they still haven't bought their book, and you say, you know, how do you expect to pass the class without buying the book? And the answer is, I just can't afford it. So this is no longer a convenience or a kind thing to do for students. It's becoming a necessity. But there's a lot of good ideas out there, and there are a lot of innovative ways of dealing with this. Some additional posting requirements in HB 736. Again, good practice, things we have been and should have been doing anyway. Now it's the law. HB 1244 establishes a single standard for assessing college readiness. Right underneath textbooks in terms of political intrigue is the high cost of developmental education. And the legislature has grown impatient with all the different ways and all the different instruments that we use to measure college readiness. So the law now is there will be one standard. You either hit it or you don't. And let's try to simplify matters. This isn't simple stuff, by the way. And those of you who deal with underprepared students know that there's a lot of reasons and a lot of ways that students can be underprepared. Nonetheless, the law now is that we will come up with a single standard for measuring their readiness. The last two on this slide have to do with academic advising. The legislature hears a lot of horror stories from nieces and nephews and grandchildren about how they were misadvised. Most of this is anecdotal. Nonetheless, it has now found its way into statute, and these two new laws require institutions to come up with measurable outcomes for assessing the quality of academic advising that students receive at institutions of higher education in the state. These are all things that we need to be working on anyway, but now if we don't do it, we're going to go to jail. Okay, so that's the additional incentive. A couple of quick committee announcements. The Board of Regents Academic and Student Affairs Committee, which is chaired by Regent Elaine Mendoza, is unusually busy. Regent Mendoza, and many of you met her when she was on campus, during the summer, is taking her responsibility as committee chair very, very seriously. And just last week, there was a meeting in Austin of two committees that she has formed, one on learning outcomes and one on metrics for determining success. We do have representatives on both of these committees, Dr. Maria Hinojosa on the Learning Outcomes Committee and Dr. Ricky Dobbs on the metrics for determining success. So my gratitude goes to both of them for participating in this process, and I really applaud Regent Mendoza for her vision. She wants the A&M system to lead the charge on these two very important issues so that we are there at the table when these conversations are going on in Austin, rather than being affected by and reacting to policy and statutory changes. She wants our system to be in a leadership position in molding the conversation and setting the agenda. So it's a very noble task, and I think one that has a lot of merit to it. Well, let me close out with just a concluding remark or two, and then we'll have time for a few questions. Really, what I want to close with is an expression of heartfelt gratitude for all the great work you do and the way that you have really embraced the mission of this institution for generations. This institution exists and continues to thrive and flourish during challenging times because of the dedication and passion that all of you have for our work and for our mission. As we face the challenges, and sometimes these presentations are a little heavy on challenge and light on opportunity, but as we face these challenges, I am really heartened and comforted by the fact that we are so well positioned to respond. And we respond by drawing on an incredible resource. It is the genius of the institution, represented by all of you in this room, and many of you who are not in this room as well. But collectively, this institution has risen to the occasion countless times over many generations, and we are doing it again during this period of rapid change. I know that during various seasons, one or the other aspects of Professor Mayo's credo may be more compelling and more real than others. I think ceaseless industry best characterizes the phase we are in now. But nonetheless, it is unselfish service to others that continues to serve as the compelling force that drives all that we do. So once again, thank you very much for all that you do and all you bring to this great task. With that, I'll close the formal part. I'm going to ask the deans to join us on stage, and we have time for a few questions. Anwar, could you join us as well? Our new CIO, for those of you who have not met him, if you have questions about technology, not to suggest any particular line of inquiry, but... yeah, about 2 weeks. Dr. Ilmansky and I are kind of talking about this every day. So we would hope by the middle of the month that we will have these lines distributed.
It's basically within a couple of weeks. We have an additional request into the president now. He's going to be evaluating that. We've worked with the deans who have gotten this information, I guess, from the department heads, and we're moving that forward. And we're going to really try to get that to you as soon as possible, but I'm going to say within 2 weeks.
Okay, well enough.
Go ahead. You know, we're doing a lot to prepare for the Korean students. And you know what? Rock, would you like to comment on that? Rock Clinton? Maybe you wouldn't. I could make some comments, but Rock has all the details.
We've been talking to a number of people that this influx will affect in terms of housing, in terms of food service, in terms of churches in Dallas that serve Koreans. We have a Blue Ribbon Committee that meet today for the first time, but there have been a lot of subcommittees long previous to this. Housing is ready. The big issue for us is adjustment. Coming from Seoul, Korea, which makes Dallas, Texas look like a village, to Cow Hill, which is the old name for Commerce. We worry about that. Student Affairs is certainly involved in this. Advising is involved in this. The Student Center is involved in this. So it's going to touch the whole university. The real projection to keep in mind, the program that we've set up in Konkuk with the ELI component headed by Maxine, with students taking courses that are equivalent to our courses here using our syllabus as our textbook, this is the first volley. They're recruiting now for next year. So we could have a volley again next year in January. So this is the beginning. And I would add to that, we have 6 departments on campus that have proposals ready for Namsol University in Korea to do 2x2 programs. It's going to affect this campus dramatically. And we hope it will do a series of things to prepare faculty and staff that will be very receptive to someone coming from another world, because they will be coming from a city of 20 million people to us. Keep in mind also, Dallas has 70,000 Koreans living in Dallas proper, so this is a connection or link for them. The last thing I would add to it, not only are the students coming January 11 and 12, planes are coming in at 8:20 in the morning. A lot of the parents are coming with them to see this university.
Thank you.
Do any of Donna's friends have any questions?
We appealed the Spanish MA, and could you give us some idea of those of us who are doing the appeals, when you'll be making the presentations before the coordinating board so we can have an idea of when to get nervous?
Let's see. I don't know the exact date. It's whatever the next coordinating board meeting is, isn't it?
I think it's the 26th of this month. I'd have to check
it's
the
in
calendar,
about,
though.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the last
toward the end of the month.
We have been, we were advised, first of all, not even to appeal those because there was no point in it. There's now a system strategy to appeal all of the programs at the system institutions that the institutions wish to appeal with the endorsement of the chancellor, which will be helpful, we hope.
Okay, I'm going to assume that Donna doesn't have any more questions.
I think I'm done.
Okay, maybe you call me later if something comes up. And with that, we'll close. Thank you all for coming out this afternoon.